back with Rosie on the house. As we kind of ramble up the highway here just a little bit, let's get reintroduced to the beautiful little community of Sedona. To help us do that, we're going to bring in a resident of the area, Mr. Kenny Rowe. Kenny, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Rosie. Thank you for having me.
Hey,
what
man.
A great introduction.
Thanks. Thanks a million for joining us, taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you're running hard right now.
Oh, we are, and we're glad to say that because this is our season, so we're thrilled with it.
That's right. Hey, share with our listeners just how a drywaller in Phoenix ends up becoming an art gallery owner in Sedona.
Well, that's a great question. Boy, how many minutes do we have? Well, here's the thing. And you and I experienced this in Phoenix in the 80s or 70s, actually, when the housing boom was going crazy. So, I mean, there was a lot of money to be made. And I remember at the time, my dad was an electrical engineer for, at that time, called Mountain Bell. And I was making more money than him in the drywall profession. And so it was so appealing. And at the time, we were doing John F. Long and Del Webb, and they were turnkey 15 homes a day sometimes. So there was a lot of money. Anyway, so...
I mean, those were the glory days. I mean, I was on the framing crews, and we'd show up at John F. Long subdivisions, and we didn't build model homes. We just built the whole subdivision, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You would see the bathrooms coming on the back of a truck.
That's right.
Set by a crane.
You could
build the house around the bathroom. It was hilarious.
You could climb up on top of one of those roofs and look around you 360 degrees. As far as you could see, there were carpenters nailing roof sheathing down, man. It was great.
Oh, it was nuts, but well, sure, a fun experience. Well, I'll tell you, it was like mayhem without even knowing it at the time. But it was great. But you know, I just didn't feel like it was, you know, something I wanted to do the rest of my life. So, ironically, one of the crew members that I was working with was having a fish mounted at a taxidermy shop, and so he said, "Well, after work, we got to swing by and pick up my fish." And we went in this place, and I thought, holy cow, I've never seen anything like this. And on the wall were all these mounts, of course, fish and big game animals. But there were mannequins that these mounts were, you know, the skin was stretched over. And I thought, man, I would love to sculpt mannequins. And so I started working for this guy nights and weekends and just got totally into it. And but there was no money to be made, so I go back to drywall when I was starving and back to taxidermy when I was wanting to feed my soul. And that's the story. I ended up in taxidermy. My wife and I, Monica, opened our shop in 1980 and had it for 14 years.
Wow. And so So how do you get your break?
Oh, well, it's interesting. So here's another burnout, basically, where you're in taxidermy. And again, I love the trade, but it's just so hard to make a living at it. So my mother, thankfully, was a painter, an artist, so I always had that nurturing, you know, environment. I thought, you know what? I sculpt mannequins for these big game animals. Why don't I just do it on a smaller scale and cast them in bronze? So my wife and I took a college course at Glendale Community College on sculpting, and it was one of those things in life where the minute that you walked in the door and you saw what was going to happen in the classroom, you knew you were going to do this some way, shape, or form as a living. And, man, so by day I was a taxidermist, and now by night I'm a sculptor.
And that's got to beat hanging 12-foot sheets of 5/8 rock.
Oh, yes. Over your head.
Oh, man.
Oh my gosh. Oh. Yes. And, oh, man, and sore shoulders and necks and, oh.
Boy,
it did beat it.
Oh, it had to. So you create a couple of these sculptures.
Yeah, and see, here's the thing. Being a total newbie, I'm stuck in my world of taxidermy, not even knowing what's out there in the gallery world, totally intimidated. And so, but what I did know, and I was told by a few friends, is, look, if you try to get into a gallery, you've got to have a body of work, and you have to have enough so they can see your style. Well, you know, it's not cheap to cast these pieces in bronze. So you're talking thousands of dollars from a starving taxidermist trying to get a body of work. And then you hope it's accepted. And by gosh, I got into a gallery in Scottsdale that was one of the premier at the time. Unfortunately, they have closed. But It was Troy's Western Heritage Gallery that
has
an amazing legacy in that town.
And
Legacy Gallery, which is still there as part of the family, so they were just an institution. And for me, being this taxidermist, to be in that gallery was like being on the moon.
Different. Well, we've got about 1 minute before the break. Describe to me how you approach Troy and say, will you look at what's in this box?
Well, it was interesting because I was working a show. It was the Safari Club International show. No, I'm sorry. It was a Safari Club International show in the early 90s, and I recognized Troy Murray when he walked by our booth, and I had a booth of taxidermy and a booth of sculpture all by me. And he took a second look, and we got to talking, and we hit it off really well, and I just kept bugging him until he would finally look at my work in person in his gallery.
I know that. And I know that gallery well.
Oh, my gosh.
Was in it often. We're here with Kenny Rowe Gallery in Tlacopaque, underneath the bell right there in Sedona. We're going to come back, talk more with Kenny about his gallery, his artwork, and the beautiful community of Sedona when we get back. Y'all stay tuned.